evening, everyone, and welcome to the Divided Kingdom. I'm Lou Caravelli, and here it is, nearing the end of April 2025. And I thought I'd begin tonight with a little something that none of us can avoid, and that's breathing. And this has to do with that. From the People's Voice, we have this headline: Major U.S. city declares public health emergency as chemtrails. Let me say that again. Chemtrails flood the skies. This again was from the People's Voice, April 24th, 2025, by Sean Adeltabatabai. And I hope I'm saying his name right. I use his things from time to time, and hope I'm doing him justice with his pronouncing his name. All right, Chicago has declared a public health emergency as chemtrails laden with toxic chemicals blanket the city skies, sparking widespread concern. Air quality readings hit a catastrophic 500 on the Air Quality Index, that is the AQI. That's the worst possible score, prompting urgent action from city officials. On Wednesday afternoon, air quality maps revealed a massive cloud of hazardous air engulfing the entire Chicago metropolitan area, fueling fears of a deliberate chemical release. While some skeptics question whether the crisis is real, the alarming AQI levels and visible pollution have left residents demanding answers and accountability. The Daily Mail.co.uk reports an AQI of 500 denotes extremely hazardous air quality, where pollutant levels are at or beyond the upper limits of what monitoring systems typically measure, which typically only happens during massive wildfires or volcanic eruptions. The news comes as Chicago was just found to have some of the worst air quality in the United States. Chicago specifically ranked poorly in particle pollution, which refers to tiny solid or liquid particles suspended in the air that people can breathe in. I guess I should say that people can breathe in. What both Google and Apple customers received, while both Google and Apple customers received alarming messages about the apparent emergency, the news actually caused more confusion than panic. Residents in the Chicago area took to social media Wednesday afternoon to share what their smartphones were telling them about the conditions outside, with many saying there was no emergency at all, according to their air quality trackers. However, one person posted an image on Reddit revealing that the AQI in Chicago had reached 405 just after noontime Eastern Time. How dangerous is it for me and my kids to be outside today? They asked. Dr. Vin Gupta, now this is not the Dr. Gupta you may have seen on TV, but a different Dr. Gupta. He's a pulmonologist in Washington's Seattle area, told DailyMail.com, quote, an air quality of 500 or more is typically associated with some acute event, like wildfire smoke or smoke from a burning building. You typically don't see those things unless there's a major acute event that has occurred. And he went on to say, usually the worst of the immediate effects are in somebody with an illness, such as emphysema or asthma. And emphysema is where tiny air sacs in the lungs are damaged or destroyed. And he went on, heavily polluted air could cause an exacerbation like chest pain, short breathing, and it may require these people to go to the hospital, unquote. I seem to be choking myself. Maybe the air quality is not as good as it looks here. It looks like a beautiful day out here right now. Another person on X shared a message from their son showing that Chicago's air was inundated with both carbon monoxide and PM10, meaning particulate matter with a diameter of 10 micrometers or smaller. Both are toxic to humans, but they harm the body in different ways and vary in their toxicity depending on exposure levels and duration. The readings taken at 2 p.m. Eastern Time showed that Chicago was seeing carbon monoxide levels of 318 ppb, that is parts per billion, in the air. While that level is relatively low in terms of outdoor air quality, the amount of fine particulate matter in the air set off alarm bells on Google Maps' air quality tracking system. Chicago's reported PM10 concentration of 669 micrograms per cubic meter was extremely bad and fell into the hazardous category of the Air Quality Index, indicating serious health risks for everyone. Now, jumping down a little bit in the article, Dr. Juanita Mora, M-O-R-A, a physician with the American Lung Association, said that it was not unusual for Chicago to have air quality alerts, adding that smog from wildfires in other areas of the country often gets pulled to the area by the wind. Currently, first responders in New Jersey are battling a massive wildfire that has burned down over 11,000 acres. Speaking to DailyMail.com from the city's north side, Morris said she couldn't see any smog in the air Wednesday, but it was not unusual for there to be air quality warnings, even when the air was clear. The doctor noted that she received 5 alerts on her phone over air quality in this city in this year alone. And she said, quote, "We might not be able to see it in the air, but that's why I always tell my patients to check the air quality readings," Dr. Mora explained. She also warned that the reports of PM10 skyrocketing were especially alarming. She said, quote, "The particles causing air pollution are 1/10 of a diameter, and they enter very easily through the nose and mouth and go straight to the lungs. Once there, they can cause asthma exacerbations and coughs in adults," unquote. To protect health, the doctor recommended closing doors and windows during bad air quality days and using air purifiers in the home. Chicago is known for poor air quality. The American Lung Association's newly released State of the Air report lists the Windy City as 15th overall for levels of smog, worse than its ranking in the last 2 yearly reports, which ranks 17th. Quote, "Years of successful cleanup of emissions from transportation, energy generation, and industrial processes have contributed to falling ozone levels across much of the country since 2001. According to the report, which analyzed 2023 air quality data collected by the Environmental Protection Agency. And it goes on to say, unfortunately, as was shown in 2023, one bad fire season has the potential to offset that progress, at least temporarily, creating new challenges for air pollution control efforts and putting the health of the communities affected at increased risk," unquote. The state of Illinois, overall, saw one of the highest increases in ozone pollution between 2020 to 2022 and 2021 to 2023, reports. Cook County, and of course that's where Chicago is, got an F grade for high ozone days from 2021 to 2023, with 52 orange days and 6 red days of extremely bad pollution. Well, we talked a little bit last week about this whole matter of chemtrails. Of course, the major news media will debunk it and say, oh, those are nothing but contrails, just water vapor. Don't worry about it. That's their attitude, or at least that's what they're trying to tell us. However, here's another article a day later, April 25th, 2025, by Sean Adeltabatabai, from the People's Voice, with the headline, "Bill Gates set to profit millions from UK's decision to block the sun via chemtrails." And that phrase, "block the sun," is in quotation marks. The UK government is poised to approve controversial geoengineering experiments within weeks, costing £50 million to reflect sunlight away from Earth using chemicals, chemtrail technology. Backed by Bill Gates, these trials position him to reap millions in profits as the UK pushes to lead global efforts in manipulating the planet's climate. The Advanced Research and Invention Agency with the nickname ARIA, A-R-I-A, is spearheading the funding to establish the UK as a pioneer in geoengineering research, according to the Daily Mail and other sources. The initiative aims to advance techniques that alter atmospheric conditions, sparking debate over the environmental and ethical implications of such large-scale interventions. Modernity.news, which must be a publication, Modernity.news reports this. The reports outline that the experiments will focus on sunlight reflection. SAI involves injecting tiny reflective particles, such as sulfur dioxide, into the stratosphere to mimic the cooling effect of volcanic eruptions, while MCB uses ships to spray sea salt particles into low-lying clouds to enhance their reflectivity. They cite evidence from emissions on shipping routes and volcanic eruptions, like the 2014 Iceland event, suggesting these methods could temporarily cool the planet by reflecting sunlight back into space. Professor Jim Haywood from the University of Exeter, and that I presume is in England, highlighted the potential of these techniques, noting that ship emissions have historically brightened clouds, creating a dimming effect. However, the 2020 reduction of sulfur dioxide emissions from shipping led to a spike in warming, underscoring the complex balance of such interventions. ARIA's program, and again, that is short for Advanced Research and Invention Agency, ARIA's program, led by Professor Mark Symes, will include small-scale controlled outdoor tests to gather critical real-world data. These trials aim to assess whether SRM can prevent catastrophic climate tipping points, such as the collapse of ocean currents or ice sheets. Alongside outdoor experiments, the program will fund climate monitoring, modeling studies, indoor tests, and public attitude surveys, the report further notes. Potential side effects of geoengineering include regional droughts, crop failures, or shifts in weather patterns. A 2025 study by the GeoMar Helmholtz Center suggested that even combined geoengineering methods might not prevent temperatures from rising beyond 2 degrees Celsius by the year 2100. An abrupt cessation could trigger rapid warming, known as termination shock. It's clear that geoengineering experiments have already been underway for years, now that climate alarmism has been relentlessly pushed for decades. It's been deemed acceptable to disclose this particular plan to the public. In the U.S., some states, in addition to the federal government agencies under the Trump administration, are seeking bans on such radical geoengineering activity. Once again, those two articles were both from the People's Voice. One was this April 24th and the other April 25th. And let me take a minute now, speaking as Lou, to give a little background on our own program. My late wife, Elizabeth, really initiated this program way back, I guess it was somewhere around the year 2001. If she were here, she would be able to give you a more exact data on that. My memory is not quite as good as hers on that. But it all began in the strangest of ways. I think God had his hand in it, of course. Sorry to keep clearing my throat there. I think maybe the hidden particles are getting to me. Or maybe I'm just getting hoarse from talking. Probably don't do enough talking late years, now that I'm no longer teaching school. But anyway, getting back to that, I, as a young guy, was fascinated by the whole topic of UFOs. And had a bunch of books on it. My interest has kind of died down because I don't hear as much about it lately. But I was in a nearby bookstore, and I saw a magazine on UFOs, and it kind of, stirred up my interest. So I bought the magazine, but that was a time when I was just inundated with schoolwork, and I didn't read it. But Elizabeth picked it up, and I guess she thought to herself, well, what's this all about? Why did Lou bother to spend money on this? I'm just interpreting what she probably thought. She never said that. Well, in that, there was an article by her distant cousin, Al Coppett, that many of you may have known of Al. He passed away a couple years back. And it was about this very topic of chemtrails. And it contained now my mind is getting hazy on the whole relationship here. But I believe that I went online just to look him up, to find out more about him. And I found out he had a letter, which not so long ago was still on the internet. If you just put in Al Coppett letter chemtrails as a search, you might be able to find it. It was a letter to one of the high-ups in the Air Force complaining about this whole topic. Now, Al was no slouch. Al had been an action officer on the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the military for a number of years. He was a veteran of the military, high-ranked, so he knew what he was talking about. And he didn't beat around the bush. He just laid it out straight. And this now, we are talking over 20 years ago. So, you know, this was not a new topic now. At any rate, one thing led to another, and Elizabeth became more and more interested. We actually contacted Al. They had a number of good discussions together over the phone. We never met him in person, unfortunately. We saw him on videos, though, several interesting videos, both Christian and secular, although they kind of overlapped in this case. So that's how the whole interest in chemtrails, and eventually we got the radio show in various formats until the present day, as you hear it now. I wish you were here with me. It's been 10 weeks now since she passed away. And, we all miss her. That's as a dear wife and as a hostess on this show, I just can't say enough about her. Well, let's resume now some of the other articles. A third one from the LifeSite News is free speech over in the UK. That is over with in the UK. Government censorship reaches frightening new levels. And the subheadline, instead of changing policies which threaten the collapse of Western civilization, the liberal global governments prefer to make public opposition to their politics a crime. This is by Frank Wright, again from LifeSite News, Wednesday, April 23rd, 2025. The UK's crackdown on free speech continues, with two online platforms withdrawing over censorship concerns, while liberal critical speakers are banned from entering Britain and even arrested on arrival. Following the introduction of laws which could see online platforms fined millions of pounds, free speech social media company Gab and video sharing platform BitChute have withdrawn their services from UK users. As Reclaim the Net, a UK-based online freedom campaign group, said on March 28th, quote, the British government has begun aggressively extending its censorship regime beyond its borders, invoking the sweeping powers granted by the Online Safety Act 2023 to demand compliance from foreign-based platforms. BitChute withdrew its services from the UK users, quote, over online censorship laws, unquote, as the Free Speech Union reported on April 10th. Gab's statement, published on its UK domain, said the company was acting to protect British users from being jailed for posting on its platform. Skipping down, we read, the UK government claims its laws support online safety, that's in quotes, online safety, but as Reclaim the Net explains, quote, Critics argue the term is being used as a smokescreen for state-sanctioned thought control, unquote. The future of information in Britain looks bleak, as one UK commentator said, promising a, quote, TV version, unquote, of the Internet, sterilized by UK government media watchdog Ofcom. Unless the White House really forces Britain to do it, Ofcom will not be abolished because the mainstream parties approve of it, and no party that doesn't will be allowed anywhere near power. Millennial woes, and this is Liz interjecting here, I'm not sure if that's a publication, it sounds like it is, Millennium Woes concludes that there is likely a hit list of further online platforms to be taken down in order, beginning with the video outlets Odyssey and Rumble, the messenger service Telegram, then the free speech publisher Substack, and on to Elon Musk's X. Woes warns, and I'm looking at what is Woes? Well, that must be another commentator. Woes warns, if allowed to continue in its current mode, Ofcom will take down the platforms it wants to, then tame the others by hook or by crook. The Internet in Britain will be homogenized, redacted farce, a pathetic TV version of what people in more civilized countries have. The charge of state-sanctioned thought control is reinforced by the arrest on Good Friday of a Palestinian Christian and Cambridge University professor at London's Heathrow Airport. The reason for Professor Makram, M-A-K-R-A-M, Corey McCool. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Corey McCool, M-A-C-H-O-O-L's detention was that he has spoken out against Israel's war in Gaza, as reports from the UK said. Professor Corey, whose speech was criminalized under anti-terror laws, had in the past co-founded an anti-extremist institute in 2016 at Cambridge University. British left populist George Galloway responded on X, formerly Twitter, saying the arrest of this, quote, gentle, devout, moderate, academic father, unquote, suggests that the, quote, government has declared war on its citizens, that liberty is dead in this land, and that Britain is no longer a safe country, unquote. Galloway's warning of it can happen to you, and it will, came a day after reports that a French philosopher, noted for his outspoken criticism of mass migration, had been banned from entering the UK. Renaud Camus, I guess it would be pronounced C-A-M-U-S, is the author of The Great Replacement, coining a term now used to describe the liberal global policy of the replacement of Western populations via mass immigration. The Great Replacement is routinely debunked by the ruling elite as a, quote, conspiracy theory, unquote. As Camus once said to Britain's Matt Goodwin, how can it be debunked when it is evident in every street? He was due to speak at a Remigration Conference in England on April 26th, organized by the Nationalist Homeland Party. It is dedicated to the discussion of policies similar to those now being enacted by the Trump administration. According to the Daily Telegraph, Camus was denied entry to the UK by government order. In an email seen by the Telegraph, the Home Office informed Mr. Camus that he had been denied the electronic travel authorization, ETA, needed to enter Britain. The email read, quote, your presence in the UK is not considered to be conducive to the public good, unquote. And skipping down some more, the fact that the British government is banning speakers who promote policies now being enacted with widespread support in the United States has not only provoked criticism, it may derail UK-US trade negotiations. Days ago, Vice President J.D. Vance warned UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer that Britain will get no deal with the U.S. over tariffs if its, quote, hate speech, unquote, laws remain in place. And this is a quote, I presume, from J.D. Vance. Sir Keir Starmer must embrace Donald Trump's agenda by repealing hate speech laws in order to get a trade deal over the line, a Washington source has told The Independent, unquote. A Washington source told the UK-based Independent, no free speech, no deal. It's as simple as that. Vance has been a stern critic of British and European moves towards increasing censorship and the suppression of freedom of opinion, describing it in his February Munich speech as a threat to democracy from within Western Europe, and one which is led by its liberal globalist governments. Vance is reportedly obsessed, and this is in quotes, obsessed by the fall of Western civilization, unquote, the Independent's Washington source explains. It is clear that Vance believes that this fall is very much a threat created by the political decisions of governments like Starmer's. The use of hate speech and anti-terrorism laws in these cases shows how the UK state-sanctioned suppression of speech affects anyone, from the left, the right, or from the Christian faith, anyone who criticizes the policies of the government. These are not fringe extremist views, but those held by increasing numbers of ordinary people in Britain and throughout the Western world. Instead of changing policies which threaten the collapse of Western civilization, the liberal global governments prefer to make public opposition to their politics a crime. In the case of the British state, its hardline stance to defend its idea of democracy from free speech is now threatening its economic future. The politics and laws celebrated as a guarantee of safety increasingly resemble a form of extremism which will not tolerate debate. Interesting points. That's from LifeSite News. The title is Free Speech Over in the UK by Frank Wright, Wednesday, April 23rd, if you'd like to read the whole of that. Now, hardly a week goes by when we don't hear something about COVID and the COVID vax. Here's something from Slate News, April 20th, 2025, by Frank Bergman. Norway exposes cover-up of a global death surge among the COVID vaxxed. Well, this is not really very new, except that some of the research is new. But I'll give you the highlights of it. Norway has issued a chilling alert to the rest of the world after the nation's leading scientists exposed a cover-up of data linking a global surge in excess deaths to COVID mRNA, quote-unquote, vaccines. A group of Norwegian scientists is sounding the alarm after a major study of international mortality data exposed a global cover-up of excess deaths among the, quote-unquote, vaccinated. While the link between deaths and COVID shots is not new, the researchers found evidence that reporting on the official data had been manipulated to hide the link to the injections. They uncovered previously unreported data showing that excess deaths skyrocketed among the COVID vaxxed. In addition, the scientists found that previous studies showing high mortality rates among the unvaccinated had selectively used data for unhealthy cohorts. And this is Lou speaking now. I think what they're saying there is they selected data from those who are already unhealthy to try to make it look like the unvaccinated were in worse shape than the vaccinated. Back to the article. This manipulation sought to suggest to the public that people who refused to get vaccinated were dying. The team behind the study was led by Professor Jarl Arsted of the Western Norway University of Applied Sciences. The study analyzed the UK government's official Office for National Statistics, ONS, data for all-cause mortality among COVID-vaccinated and unvaccinated citizens 10 years of age and older. The researchers noted that the data for England is typical of most other Western nations, including the USA, Canada, Australia, and the rest of Europe, as the same vaccines and similar pandemic protocols were deployed. And once again, I won't keep saying it, but every time they use the word vaccines here, they put it in quotes. As we've said so many times before, and I'm repeating myself, I know, these COVID so-called vaccines were not traditional vaccines in any sense of the word. They didn't prevent the illness. In many cases, they don't seem to have even helped with the illness. I know one cousin of mine was vaccinated at least twice and came down with a severe case of the illness. So these stories that it mitigated the symptoms of the illness, that is, the vaccines did this, the COVID vaccines, to me, are just plain bunk. But getting back to the article, the data covers a 26-month period from April 2021 to May 2023. And I'm going to skip down. Some of this is just very technical. But skipping down, the study found that all-cause deaths surged among the vaccinated in the months following the rollout of the COVID mRNA injections for public use. The researchers noted that the injection may have offered, quote, temporary protection, unquote, from COVID. However, the shots increased mortality overall among the vaccinated, far outweighing any possible benefits. And Dr. Arstead adds, quote, strengthening the interpretation was relatively high mortality among vaccinated individuals not involving COVID-19, counterintuitively following periods of excess mortality. Well, that's a little hard to fathom that. You may have to look up this article and read it a couple times if you want to really let that sink in. They have a good graph that compares the excess mortality and also the cumulative mortality, if you keep adding up the deaths over a period of time, beginning with January 12th of 2020, going up through a little beyond January 1st of 2023. And there is a significant difference there. And now, I'll skip down a little bit. Here we have another quote, I presume, from Dr. Arstead. This study included those 10 years and older. I therefore encourage future research to analyze different age cohorts separately to assess how findings may converge or eventually diverge. The study comes amid growing evidence linking COVID vaccines to global surges in deaths and deadly diseases. As Slate News recently reported, another explosive study found that around 30 years have been wiped from the average life expectancy of people who received at least two doses of COVID mRNA vaccines. The alarming study found that the mRNA injections reduce a person's lifespan by a whopping 37%. In the United States, the average life expectancy in 2019 was 78.79 years. And just doing a little arithmetic, a 37% reduction from that 78.79 is equal to a loss of just over 29 years. Well, this is Lou speaking now, that is shocking, to say the least. And, of course, we don't know for sure. There hasn't been enough time to see if this is true. But it certainly seems, I guess the word is, shocking. The article concludes, meanwhile, the FDA has revealed that people who received COVID mRNA vaccines are at risk of suffering a sudden and unexpected death for up to 15 years after they received their last injection. According to the FDA, the mRNA vaccines have created a sudden death ticking time bomb due to the massively increased risk of vaccinated people suffering from a deadly blood clot. The shocking admission was revealed in a new peer-reviewed study published in the prestigious International Journal of Innovative Research in Medical Science. According to the study, the FDA's Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research admits that the regulatory window of concern for a novel genetic product, such as COVID mRNA vaccines, is 5 to 15 years. Worryingly, the admission suggests that the vaccinated population may be facing a wave of surging blood clots as the COVID shots were only rolled out for public use roughly 4 years ago. Again, that article is entitled Norway Exposes Cover-Up of Global Death Surge Among COVID Vaxxed. It appeared on the website slaynews.com, was by Frank Bergman, April 20th, just a few days ago. Now, something on a whole different kind of topic. A little bit of speculation, a little bit of interesting stuff from the People's Voice. And many of you may have heard this before. I know Jack Van Empe would sometimes talk about this. He was an evangelist on the TV for many, many years, had an encyclopedic memory of the Bible. He could quote whole chapters of the Bible, word, just about word for word. He died not too long ago and had a beautiful wife that joined him, Rex Seller, I believe her name was. So some of you may have heard this before, but it's worth repeating. On the People's Voice, April 21st, by Baxter Dimitri, ancient Vatican prophecy claims Pope Francis was the final pontiff before the end of days. According to a 900-year-old book in the Vatican, Judgment Day is now upon us, and Pope Francis was the last pontiff and a leader of the Church. The death of Pope Francis on Easter Monday has sparked interest in a 900-year-old book known as The Prophecy of the Popes, and they give the Latin title, which I won't attempt. I never had Latin in school, but in English, the title would be Prophecy of St. Archbishop Malachy, M-A-L-A-C-H-Y, Concerning the Supreme Pontiffs. And that book prophesies the year of Judgment Day. For those who need brushing up on their scripture, Judgment Day, also known as the Final Judgment or the Second Coming of Jesus Christ, is the day that Jesus returns to earth to judge humanity and destroy earth and heaven. Essentially, it's the day we find out who will be saved and who will be damned. Well, now, let me speak up as Lou. That's not my theology. To me, well, I don't want to get into a lengthy discussion, but if you've accepted Jesus Christ, it's my firm belief that you are saved. But this is not the time and place to go into that in great depth. So I'll read on, and we'll take this for what it's worth. According to the 12th century book by Irish Bishop St. Malachy, and again, his name is spelled, if you want to look it up, M-A-L-A-C-H-Y. And according to this book, Judgment Day is going to take place in 2027. Located in the Vatican's secret archives and discovered in 1590 by Benedictine monk Arnold Wion. And I'm looking at this, I think it's W-I-O-N. I don't believe that's an L, I believe it's an I, W-I-O-N. The Prophecy of the Popes is making headlines due to a prophecy that ties with Pope Francis's death. The 88-year-old pontiff died on Easter Monday after suffering a stroke and cardiac arrest just months after recovering from a life-threatening illness during which he was hospitalized with pneumonia. The Vatican book contains a series of Latin phrases in 112 mysterious sections which predict the Catholic popes, beginning with Celestine II, up to the Church's current leader. One passage attributed to Pope Sixtus V reads, quote, Axel in the midst of a sign. That's a strange one, isn't it? Axel, like an axle on an automobile, Axel in the midst of a sign, S-I-G-N. Pope Sixtus' tenure began 442 years after the first pope's rule, and the passage suggests he is in the middle of the papal lineage, thus indicating the end of the world would come 442 years later in 2027. The last passage of the book reads, quote, In the final persecution of the Holy Roman Church that will reign, Peter the Roman will feed his flock amid many tribulations, after which the seven-hilled city will be destroyed. and the dreadful judge will judge the people. The end, unquote. The seven-hilled city refers to Rome, and some interpret the last passage as Peter taking over as the Pope from Francis due to the latter's chronic lung disease, making Francis the last Pope. Now, if you're interested in this, and I'll give the website again in a minute, they have a large list. I guess it's an actual photocopy from this book they're talking about that lists various, I would call them code names, I presume, for the popes. It doesn't really give much of an explanation. It says it's from the Lyon, L-Y-O-N, Public Library. I presume that's Lyon, France. And getting back to the article now, it sounds very Dan Brown. Some of you, and I'll interject, some of you may have read his books, such as the Da Vinci Code, and he has a couple of others out. So it all sounds very Dan Brown, and the prophecy of the popes has appeared in popular fiction, including Steve Barry's 2005 novel, The Third Secret, and James Rollins' 2009 novel, The Doomsday Key. It's worth noting that modern scholars have disputed the origins of the text, saying that the book is simply cryptic forgery created for partisan political reasons. Others also refer back to the Bible, which specifically warns against predicting the date of the Second Coming. Matthew 24:36 reads, "But of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father alone." Unquote. So maybe don't get out your calendars just yet. Well, it's an interesting article. Some of you might want to look at it. Again, it's from The People's Voice. And that website, by the way, is not .com. It's .tv. ThePeople'sVoice.tv. And the date of that was April 21st, 2025. Ancient Vatican prophecy claims Pope Francis was the final pontiff before the end of days. Okay. We'll switch gears again. Here's an interesting short article from the People's Voice. Ron Johnson says new 9/11 hearings being planned, suspects an awful lot is being covered up. April 22nd, 2025 by Neam Harris. And of course, Ron Johnson is a Republican senator in the U.S. Senate. Johnson cited unanswered questions surrounding the official narrative and the handling of evidence. He says he wants answers on, quote, what actually happened on 9/11. What do we know? What is being covered up? Unquote. During an interview with Benny Johnson, the Wisconsin GOP senator said he wanted to know why the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, had not publicly released certain information about the attacks, including the collapse of Building 7. And let me just put a little background information in, because I know some of our listeners may be young. It was shocking to me, before I retired 4 years ago, that I had to stop and think that many of my students were too young to remember anything about the tragedies of 9/11. They were born either before 2001, or they were so young they would have no memory of it. And one of the various questions, and a lot of them, about the official narrative, is this Building 7, which collapsed, I think, around 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And, of course, the Twin Towers collapsed in the morning. So quite a number of hours went by. There were no large fires visible in that building. And even Dan Rather on the, I guess it would be the CBS News, commented as he was watching the building collapse that it looked exactly like a demolition, a planned demolition. And the owner, I can't think of his name right now, some of you may know it, the owner of the building said in an interview, I think with National Public Radio, something to the effect, we'd had such a loss of life, we decided to pull the building. was similar to that. Well, to pull, in the jargon of this professional demolition, means to have a controlled demolition, to collapse the building and then just cut off the rubble. So that's one of the things that Senator Johnson wants to know more about. RT, which I guess is a publication of some sort, reports, during an interview with conservative commentator Benny Johnson, which was published on Monday, Senator Johnson questioned several aspects of the 9/11 investigation, including the collapse of Building 7. He said, "I don't know that you can find structural engineers other than the ones that have the corrupt investigation inside NIST that would say that that thing didn't come down in any other way than a controlled demolition." NIST, again, is the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Now, again, I'll interject. They were supposed to come out with a report about the collapse of the Twin Towers and other aspects of the 9/11 tragedy. They did not come out with a report on this Building 7, which leads people to think whatever they found out did not mesh with the official government opinion, that it was merely a result of some debris striking the building from the collapse of the Twin Towers. That's the official government line, you might say. Going on now, RT reports, Senator Johnson, who chairs the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, also criticized the removal and destruction of physical evidence from the site, calling it totally contrary to what other firefighting firefighting investigation procedures. And here's another quote from Senator Johnson. "Where's all the documentation from the NIST investigation? There are a host of questions that I want, and I will be asking, quite honestly, now that my eyes have been opened." So apparently Senator Johnson has at some point in the recent past come up with these questions, which are honest questions. And I had a thought there I wanted to interject. I would just say I've read several books, and I'll give you a personal opinion here. When I was working full-time, Elizabeth would sometimes listen to Alex Jones in the afternoon on his show. And Alex in those days had some quite a number, apparently, of guests who were authorities on this topic, including David Ray Griffin, who's written several very convincing books. I have several of them myself, including The New Pearl Harbor. And The New Pearl Harbor Revisited, I think, is the title of the updated version. And also has a commentary book on the 9/11 report, the official government. I don't want to call it a whitewash exactly, but that in some aspect seems to be what it is. So I think Senator Johnson has apparently seen the light, too, about some of this. There are so many questions, just like the Kennedy assassination. You get the impression the government has covered it up. And this business that he was talking about removing physical evidence, he's referring to the fact that soon after the collapse, they took away everything they could get their hands on in the way of the rubble from the Twin Towers, including the steel girders. And I think a large part of it was shipped overseas, a lot to China, as scrap. Now, this was evidence that should have been investigated. If there was any kind of planned demolition, it might have shown up. But no, the government didn't want that, apparently, because they allowed that to happen, and they might even have precipitated this withdrawal of the evidence or removal of the evidence. Now, reading on, when asked about whether the public might see hearings on the issue, Johnson replied, "I think so." He further suggested that President Donald Trump, quote, being a New Yorker himself, unquote, might have an interest in reopening the case. Quote, what actually happened in 9/11? What do we know? What's being covered up? My guess is there's an awful lot being covered up in terms of what the American government knows about 9/11. Those are Senator Johnson's words. Johnson also said he recently spoke with former Congressman Kurt Weldon and plans to, quote, work with him to expose what he's willing to expose, unquote. Earlier this month, Weldon urged Trump to appoint people of impeccable integrity the Leader Commission to study the facts surrounding 9/11. In an interview with journalist Tucker Carlson, Weldon dismissed the label of conspiracy theorist, suggesting that the CIA and the government have long engaged in disinformation. You know, and this is a quote from Weldon, you know, what gets me is reporters who call people conspiracy theorists. Well, that's all the agency does, meaning the CIA. They're the ones who create the conspiracies, Weldon said. They have whole courses for their agents on how to make people look like they're conspiracy theorists, unquote. And again, this is Lou. I got to put my 2 cents worth in. Anytime they want to debunk even the best of theories, they will just say, oh, it's a conspiracy theory. Well, their version of what happened to 9/11 is itself a conspiracy theory. It says that a bunch of Arabs conspired, meeting in Germany and other places, to plan this operation. It, of course, there are so many details that they leave out. Why were the American Air Force jets unable to get to the hijackers in time before the crashes into the Twin Towers occurred, and for that matter, into the Pentagon? Well, someday we'll may have to spend a whole program on that, just like a whole program sometime in the fall on the Kennedy assassination. And finishing this up, the 9/11 Commission report, released in 2004, remains the most comprehensive U.S. federal review of the attacks. However, critics have pointed to omissions and the continued classification of key government documents. Johnson, that's Senator Johnson, also referenced a bipartisan effort with Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut, in 2023 to obtain unredacted FBI files. He said, quote, we wanted to get those answers, those documents for the families. Again, we didn't get squat from the FBI, unquote. And he's talking there about the families of the victims of the 9/11 attacks. And again, a good book if you want to hear the skeptical side of things, and I think it's a very good book, is by David Ray Griffin, The New Pearl Harbor, or the updated version, The New Pearl Harbor Revisited. Both very good books. All right, another little thing, a sidelight on the COVID narrative. We have this headline from the People's Voice. Texas orders Pentagon to clean the records of returning soldiers who refused COVID jabs. If you think back a couple of years, a lot of soldiers or members of the armed forces in general who did not want to get these COVID vaccines were dismissed from the military. Again, this is from the People's Voice by Kelvin Freeberger, Thursday, April 24th, 2025. Dateline, Washington, LifeSite News. U.S. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth issued an update Wednesday on the Trump administration's efforts to rehire military personnel discharged by the Biden administration for refusing COVID-19 vaccines, detailing steps underway to ensure no blemishes on their service records remain. Until December 2022, President Joe Biden's Pentagon leaders imposed COVID-19 vaccine mandates on American servicemen and women, provoking lawsuits and threatening soldier and pilot shortages in the tens of thousands that only added to broader problems for force, strength, troop morale, and public confidence. In his first month back in office, President Donald Trump issued a directive to reinstate all such members, vowing to give them back pay as well. Well, I certainly hope that that occurs. That, to me, was a grave injustice. It was a so-called vaccine that had not been properly tested. And because men and women wouldn't take it in the military, they were just dismissed. Gross unfairness. Well, we've just got a few minutes left. I'll read you a few headlines I just copied off the internet in the last few minutes. One of them came from the Farmingdale Observer, which I think is on Long Island. Unexpected location is shaking up the global resource landscape. Lithium deposit in Arkansas. This is a quote, this discovery represents a potential game changer in the global race for battery material. Because lithium batteries are needed for all kinds of things, including battery-driven cars, which, you know, are supposed to be the coming thing. Although I'm not going to get one if I don't have to. I just got a new car not long ago. Used car, but a nice one. And it is gasoline-driven. Another headline from Fox News. Suspect in restaurant theft of DHS boss Christy Noem's purse is illegal immigrant. So apparently Christy's purse was stolen while she was at a restaurant, I think in D.C. Fox News. And these were all datelined the 25th of April. The headline reads, movie Snow White cements status as one of Hollywood's all-time biggest flops. Well, I don't think I'm going to be going to see that one. I don't get to go to movies much anymore, but that's one of the last ones I go to. Then from the Washington Times, April 27th, House budget proposes $46.5 billion for border wall. Well, that's good news. And then one more for the New York Post. On April 27th, Vancouver Festival attack death toll rises to 11 as cops say driver had extensive mental health history. But this is a news story about, I think it was an SUV. The driver drove it right into the crowd. We've seen a lot of that in the last few years as a mass death situation. Well, I hear our music, so I'll thank you for listening. You can write to me at Lou Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Again, that's Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Love to get your letters. And any donations, awfully good too. So thank you so much for listening. Tune in again next week. Good night.